Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week, we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week, we delve into the UBS International Pension Gap Index, a recent white paper from the UBS Wealth Management CIO exploring the sustainability of various pension systems around the world. We'll hear about the influences acting on this space, from widespread demographic change to pressure on public finances to a broadly challenging investment environment. Our panel will talk us through the methodology UBS has employed to make sense of all these complexities, and they'll suggest some key takeaways to hopefully help ensure that fit-for-purpose pension funds and the associated peace of mind can be a reality for more and more people. We start with Daniel Kalt, UBS Chief Economist and Chief Investment Officer for Switzerland. If we just take a step back, Daniel, tell us a bit about why UBS has published this report. How does this fit in? Because this is an area of great interest to a lot of people. Why is it such a compelling area for you and your colleagues?
Yeah, we thought that as one of or the largest wealth manager on this planet, we thought that actually one of our core businesses is advising people how to prepare for retirement and have a good plan ready, how to build assets, how to grow your wealth so that you are secure financially when you enter into your retirement period. And therefore, we wanted to just have an international comparison of how the pension system in across a selection of countries are providing coverage for your retirement period. And we wanted to know how good are the mandatory systems in each of these countries where we've looked at, and how well you're covered from these pension systems. And what we found was pretty interesting, because none of the mandatory systems we looked at really provides enough for an average person on this planet to really have enough income in retirement to keep up basic living standard, yes.
Let's turn next to Jackie Bauer, economist in the CIO at UBS, whose research focuses on retirement in both Swiss and international contexts. Jackie, we'll get to methodology and the research specifically. Maybe you could start by giving us an overview and explaining why now. Why has UBS published this report in the first place? What prompted this?
You know, why now is a good question. I mean, in general, pension systems globally are going to face more and more challenges in the future, right? We have demographic change, population aging, a larger cohort of retirees compared to workers that bring the pension systems out of balance. We have rising government debt levels, which make it ever harder to service their growing pension payments. And we have this low interest rate environment that makes it hard for pension funds who have to invest part of their capital, at least, into safe assets like bonds, right? So if rates will start to rise in the future, they will actually be hurt by that. So it is a very timely topic, and it is a topic that will be with us for a long time, actually.
Michael Crook is an executive director and head of portfolio and planning in Wealth Management Research, where he advises investors on global investment strategy, asset allocation, and portfolio construction. Michael, maybe you can explain to us why the pension gap is such an evergreen topic, one that UBS comes back to.
And it's an evergreen issue because we have behavioral issues that keep us from saving enough money for retirement, basically. I think that's part of the human condition, for lack of a better way of saying it. You see that really across all countries, across all age groups. To a large extent, you know, most of us are a bit short-sighted when it comes to saving money for retirement. A lot of countries have pensions, mandatory pension schemes that people are at least involved in if they're working, but they're not sufficient. And that's why this is really important, is that we, not in addition to those pension schemes, most people need to be saving additional assets. And we've got to keep an eye on that, because it's a lot easier if you start when you're younger than it is if you wait until you're old.
To Jackie Bauer again, and Jackie, this time for something of an overview. The UBS International Pension Gap Index. Essentially, this has sort of evaluated, what, a dozen systems around the world. Tell us a bit more about it.
Exactly. So what we did with the UBS International Pension Gap Index is we created this fictitious person that we call Jane, an average Jane. So it should be an average representative person that we can compare over these 12 countries that we look at. And what we do is we calculate the pension income that this Jane can expect from the mandatory pension system in each of the countries. And on the other hand, we calculate a consumption basket for Jane in retirement for a very basic lifestyle, actually. And then we put the two next to each other and say, well, if the costs are larger than the income from the pension system, then our Jane faces a pension gap, a gap to finance her lifestyle in retirement. And we calculate how much Jane needs to put aside from age 50 today until she retires at the statutory retirement age in order to plug this gap that she faces.
Maybe the fact that there's a gap globally doesn't surprise, but what's interesting is how different the gap is in different places. Let's look at this maybe through a US prism, perhaps. Michael Crook.
Yeah, I think the United States is maybe right in the middle in terms of the sufficiency of our system, which is called Social Security. But even that name maybe alludes to what the point of it is. A lot of countries, and the U.S. fits into this group, have essentially mandatory schemes that are really insurance, and they're not meant to replace personal savings for retirement. So the way that we have it set up in the U.S. is essentially, if you look back in the 1920s, pre-1920s, elderly people in the U.S. had a very high rate of poverty. And part of the Roosevelt administration, part of their package of policies was to create the Social Security Act. That was in 1935. And the real result was to create this baseline of income for people that made it into their 60s, essentially 70s and 80s and so forth, but people that couldn't keep working to keep them out of poverty. It's been successful from that standpoint, but it's not successful in the sense that you could possibly not save outside assets and then maybe live in a high-cost city like New York City, which is the example that we used in the piece.
On what the data tells us, Jackie Bauer, maybe we can bore down into the data. There are certain things which were uniform. So, for example, none of the mandatory systems that people will be familiar with provided enough for this sort of average Jane character to deliver the kind of retirement she wanted. I wonder, did that sort of correspond with your expectations, or did the data hold some surprises with those sorts of examples?
Well, it wasn't surprising, really, that none of the systems provides enough. I think that was something that we thought we would see in the end, exactly for the reasons of all these challenges that I mentioned before as well. But there were nonetheless some quite striking results. So, I mean, if you look at the best result in our analysis, it's Switzerland, where our Jane needs to save about 11% of her monthly income. And that's actually a fairly okay number, right? That's doable. I mean, I guess there are a lot of people who think, well, yeah, I always put aside 10% of my money, and that's not an issue. But then there are other countries in the sample where our results show that from age 50 onwards, you would need to save more than 100% of your income. And that's frankly impossible, right? And in that sense, what the analysis shows you, and which is also the reason why we chose the age of 50, is it just shows you that 50 is in some cases early enough to think about your retirement, but in other cases, you're actually well advised to start thinking about it a lot earlier, even if that feels painful at, you know, the age of 30 to think about your retirement. But it might actually give you, you know, a bit more peace of mind later on.
So the gap exists and needs to be addressed by individuals to a greater or lesser extent. But what of the more highly complex structural issues? Michael Crook.
It's maybe a good time to mention the winner of the last Nobel Prize in Economics, Richard Thaler. He's done a lot of work on, well, even written a book called Nudge, but a lot of work on how we can incentivize people to make decisions that are in their own best welfare. And I think that's an important lesson. When the studies have been done, they do simple things, like when somebody starts working in the U.S., if they're automatically enrolled in a what we call a defined contribution retirement plan, which essentially means that you know what you're putting in, you don't know what you'll get out, of course, because it depends on how the investment markets do, but at least you know what you're putting in. If you're automatically enrolled to save for retirement, people tend to do it more often and they tend to save a lot more. And so I think that governments, certainly, and private corporations certainly need to think about the welfare of their citizens and their employees and help them make those good decisions. The challenge, of course, is that even if you look at all of this data and you basically conclude, well, we've got to do more, the money's got to come from somewhere. And most of the same countries that have these large pension gaps are also countries that have relatively large unfunded future deficits based on the aging of their populations already. So this is a pretty large policy issue that doesn't seem to have a clear solution from a policy side, at least in particular on the U.S. side, other than trying to help people make better decisions on their own.
Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll look in more detail at the differing regional pictures. So, Jackie Bauer, turning to Europe next, are there continent-wide themes, or is it important to look at the granular level of detail wherever possible, be it London, Zurich, Milan, Paris, wherever?
Well, in generally, it's really important to be as granular as you can, right? Every retirement system is different. And also within each country's retirement system, the situation for each individual person will be different. So when we look at this average Jane, you know, we try to make her as representative as possible. But nonetheless, this is just a kind of approximation, and it should just get people to realize that thinking about retirement is important, but they need to really analyze their own situation. I mean, what you can say in terms of regional specifics, etc., is, for example, that you see the European systems generally offer more comfort, more benefits, but they also face higher demographic pressure, right? In Asia, for example, you have less demographic pressure because the workforce is generally still a bit younger. You generally have still more people working per retiree as compared to Europe. But on the other hand, the European systems are very generous. The Asian systems are not so generous and require you to save a lot more on your own. Here also lies the sustainability issue, right? The European systems promise you more, but we actually apply a higher uncertainty discount because we don't think it's that sustainable.
To you next, Michael Crook. On the three key challenges, that is demographics, public finances, and three, the broadly challenging investment environment. If you look at big pension funds, for example, often they go to what are, I guess, perceived or historically perceived as safe assets, bonds, for example. But we're in this low interest rate environment. Does that mean that there's a challenge here, a difficulty even in just finding, you know, adequate returns or the opportunities to pursue those?
It's a challenge for individuals and for pensions. Yeah, I'll give the US perspective here again. Our Social Security system doesn't actually have the money invested. And so it's not invested in bonds, it's not invested in stocks. It's a pay-as-you-go system. So people contribute and the money immediately goes back out to beneficiaries. That's worked very well in the past because we had more people contributing than we had receiving the money. That flips and becomes much more difficult going forward.
On this broadly challenging investment environment, earlier Daniel Kaup mentioned the pressure to boost individual savings. Is there also a degree to which those three challenges in particular are so profound that actually, even though we can shape better behaviour from individuals, we need actually some kind of almost systemic and systematic changes to address those challenges too? Is that a fair point?
I think that's a fair point, absolutely. I mean, we see these challenging environments, an ageing population. We have weak public finances in general. We have some country which spend 10 to 15% of their public budget on pensions already year by year, and there's very little room to do more going forward with aging populations. And we have a very challenging low investment returns environment. And this is really a challenge for basically all countries worldwide these days. And then, of course, providing or saving on the private side and putting money aside on your own and having this responsibility of individuals for their retirement is becoming a very important point to avoid basically a system collapse or social unrest once these baby boomer generations go into pension. So we really talk about a huge challenge for societies, for individuals as well, because the more these systems come under pressure, the more this will become a political issue.
And if this political pressure builds, Daniel, what then?
If governments have to save these systems and reform the system, this may mean that there will be painful adjustments ahead of us. So it's really a huge challenge and a highly political topic.
A final thought from Jackie Bauer on the overall takeaway of this report, wherever in the world you may be.
This report, even though it is really individual to the situation of average Jane, it still kind of gives you a direction for your own retirement situation, right? For everybody's retirement situation. And it should highlight that it is really important to address retirement as early as possible and to not be afraid of addressing retirement, actually. Because as we see, like, average Jane needs to save in every country, but it is actually too late to start saving or to make up the full retirement gap in some of the countries, right? So what I just want to highlight is for people not to be afraid to actually know their retirement system and know what also the voluntary options are that they have and that they can use, often with tax benefits or government subsidies, etc., to fill this gap, and that they have better chances in to have a financially sound and secure retirement the earlier they address this.
And a final takeaway on the report too, from the United States, and on the issue specifically of geographic mobility. Michael Crook has this.
In the report, we focused on New York City, which is an expensive city, as we all know, to live in. Most people can't live in New York City during their working lifetimes, forget about retirement. And what I'm getting at is geographic mobility is something that tends to be pretty important. Not all countries offer that in terms of an option. A place like Switzerland, where you tend to not see really large shifts in terms of the cost of living as you move around the country. But in the U.S., we have the ability to move from high cost of living areas to lower cost of living areas. And that's what we see a lot of retirees do to solve some of these problems, is that they spend your working life in New York City, but then you move to Florida for retirement. And that tends to help alleviate some of the pain.
And that's Michael Crook bringing us to the end of this 159th edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance each week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at monocle.com or catch up via your preferred platform. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.